Hi and welcome back everybody. This is episode number 269. Today we talk about culture in the workplace and culture when it is an offshore outsourced team. We're speaking to Derek Ackery of High Velocity. So enjoy the conversation. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/269. Enjoy. This podcast is brought to you by Payoneer, the leading global B2B payment solution for the outsourcing industry. If you're a BPO or freelancer or have outsourced staffing, then Payoneer makes sending and receiving international payments super simple, quick, secure, and of course, low cost. They have some fantastic features which have been designed specifically for the needs of this industry. You can easily manage payments between your clients, staff and suppliers across multiple currencies and international bank accounts. Payoneer help make outsourcing easy, so consider them now. And if your BPO, clients or suppliers aren't already using Payoneer, then ask them why not. For a limited time, Payoneer is offering a $50 bonus if you sign up now. So go to register.payoneer.com/OA. Or go to our website and we will have links there. Today I am joined by Derek Ackery. He is a partner at High Velocity Business Improvement Coaching. Hi, Derek. How are you today?
Yes, I'm very good, Derek. It's a bit weird calling it someone else by my own name, but yeah, I'm doing well.
So you are a business consultant at the High Velocity, and your gig is to really get the best out of teams, specifically teams that are based here in the Philippines, with of course the company or the client or the boss based overseas, wherever they are. I suppose just jumping right into it, what is the difference between staffing a team here and staffing a team overseas, whether it be the US, UK or Australia? People tend to come over here and want to just treat everyone the same, do everything the same, and literally bring the culture across. But is that necessarily the best plan all the time?
Yeah, well, my experience, I think it's like anything, you need to understand what you're getting involved with before you overcommit and find it too hard to sort of fix up big messes that might be created through, you know, not having the right plans and structures in place to begin with. I think I've been living here for 16 years, living and working here for 16 years, and one of the most common things that I've seen here, whether it's business, whether it's personal stuff, whatever it happens to be, is people get lulled into a false sense of security because Filipinos speak English, and I think they underestimate the cultural impact or the cultural influence that will impact the way that they do business. So, for example, just because Filipinos speak English, it doesn't mean they think English or they don't think like we do in Australia or the US, right? So they're still very, very much Asian at their core. So their values, their ethics, a lot of those things are still very deeply rooted in Asian culture. And I think a lot of international businesses underestimate the impact that that will have when it comes to either setting up their businesses or simply just running their business, even on a day-to-day basis. Even the most basic types of tasks, I've seen people pull their hair out because they're struggling to understand why Filipinos don't understand it or have difficulty in comprehending fully what they're trying to say. And that leads to a number of other difficulties, obviously, and that's, I think, the main cause of a lot of the frustration and miscommunication and misunderstandings that happen here in the Philippines.
Yeah, and so there is, and I see it a lot, you know, there's a big learning curve when people start outsourcing. It's super exciting. They get good initial results, I think, and then the team sort of settles in, and then they realize the nuances of managing different people in different environments and different teams. And quite often then, you know, maybe a year in, 2 years in, people start tearing their hair out and, you know, coming across a lot of frustrations because the team isn't running smoothly and what works in their hometown isn't necessarily working in the Philippines. You know, you mentioned language, but How is it different culturally? What are some very specific examples where you see people commonly tripping up?
Yeah, well, I think I can speak particularly from the Australian perspective, but I'd say that the UK, Europe, and the US fall into this category. But the main differences are that in the Philippines, and it's an Asian thing. It's not just the Philippines, but it's Central Asian, Southern Asian. It's very much a hierarchical society. So, whereas in the West we tend to have more of an egalitarian culture. So the main differences are that Filipinos are they're not very, what's the word, they don't like confrontation. So they have a lot of respect for authority and for elders, and that's why, like, for example, a lot of foreigners will be here, particularly Australians, and they're like, "Don't call me sir. I don't like being called sir. Just call me Derek," right? But the thing is, they call each other sir. Filipinos call other Filipinos sir. So it's a respect thing. And I think if people need to understand the angle that Filipinos are coming from when they call you sir, it's not because we're a foreigner, it's because they have respect for authority. And a lot of the time, in Asian culture in particular, saving face is very important. So if they don't understand something, or they're confused by something or whatever, they're not likely to ask the question. Like, if they don't understand, they feel like they're saving face by not asking the question. They don't want to appear like they don't know. And obviously, as we know, if you sort of ignore a problem and don't ask questions about it, it doesn't go away and it just gets bigger. So I've found that that's one of the key things with the way they communicate, is that they'll talk amongst themselves, amongst equals and amongst levels, but when it goes to dealing with people in authority, like bosses, managers, et cetera, they sort of shy away from it. And in Australian culture and egalitarian cultures, we consider everyone in the workplace to be equal, right? No one's better than anyone else. So, we've all got a role to play in the organisation. Whether you're the CEO or the janitor, it's just a title at the end of the day. Everybody's got a duty or a role to perform within the business.
And how does
So
that
I
play
think
out day to day though?
that's.
Because and if people are listening to this and they realize that there is a sort of respect and things like that, how are people meant to then engage? Because people in Australia or the US, they are familiar with how they interact with people. And how should the client be coming over to the cultural norm of the Philippines, or should the Philippines be moving over to the cultural norm of where the client's sitting?
I actually think it's a combination of both, because as I say with the people that I train, the Filipinos that I train, if they want to be good at their job and keep their job essentially, and it's not just about the job, they've got to buy into the organization and feel like they're part of the organization. So things just tend to move a bit slower here. In Asia, things are very much relationship based. So it's a little bit more of a slowly, slowly sort of holding the hand approach, as opposed to flat out saying, "All right, I need this, this, and this done by 5 o'clock today. And if you don't do it, then there's going to be consequences." Where in the West, you say that, and that's expected, right? You've got your job to do, and you've got a deadline, and we're brutally honest to each other about things like that. Whereas in the Philippines and Asia, they're not quite so straightforward in that regard. So by speaking to them how you would speak to, say, an Australian or an American, you're not going to get the same response out of them. So it's understanding, how to speak to them, the more softly, softly approach. Sometimes you have to explain things several different ways to get the point across, and what have you. But on the other hand, as I said, for the Filipinos, if they are buying into the organization and they're really sharing the vision of the organization, and want to have a long-term future with the business, then they also need to raise their standards, I guess, to what the business expects from them. So I guess it's a bit of a dual expectation type situation. I think to a degree, Filipinos probably need to raise their expectations, and the international businessmen need to maybe lower theirs just a little bit, right? But that's, I think, how you bring the gap closer. But I don't think there's a way that you can eliminate it, right? It'll always be there. All you can do is try and bring that gap closer.
The culture of a company is really important. And, you know, I mean, we're obviously broadly speaking in huge generalizations here, which, you know, can be significantly problematic. And, of course, this doesn't apply to everyone in every situation. But, you know, what I see in terms of some clients treat outsourced staffing as a them and us. You know, just get the job done. We will have our company culture over here, and you guys over there, just get the work done, please. Whereas other clients say, you know, we are one company. We take them under our wing. We want them to be happy. You know, and everything that anyone gets in the organization is equal. And of course, the latter is a better example of how to run a business and how to manage any kind of HR situation. But do you see it as a divide there in terms of how much work clients necessarily want to put in into building their overseas teams?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. And that's why the latter model that you talk about is more of the offshoring model as opposed to outsourcing. So you're sort of offshoring. When you're offshoring, you're more or less, it's an extension of your organization. So you're treating the person literally as if they're somebody from your own country, but you've just put them in the Philippines. So you treat them exactly the way you treat your onshore staff, whereas the outsourcing model is a little bit like just a bum on a seat, and they're there just to get the job done. And that's where the example that you just used, I think that's where that particular sort of divide is created. So the offshoring model, I think, tends to take into consideration the cultural differences and so forth a little bit more, because obviously they're trying to get their staff to blend in more with their corporate culture and their vision and so forth. And that's great. But having said that, there is still the underlying cultural differences between Asian culture and Western culture, and that need those things obviously need to be taken into consideration. And I've seen businesses that acknowledge it and do it quite well. Like they do sort of, I wouldn't say go out of their way, but they do appreciate and understand that there are differences and acknowledge them and work on them and work through them. But I've also seen a lot of businesses that literally think they can just come here and turn a key and bang, everything just works automatically like it would as if they were in the US or the UK or Australia. Right? And so that's what I mean about them lowering their expectation, because as I've discussed with people before, I think a lot of businesses, when they wake up to the fact that they should be offshoring or outsourcing, a lot of the time it can be too late. They're doing it from a retrospective sort of situation. So it's like their business is already in trouble, and it's like, how can we save money? Oh, well, let's go to the Philippines because there's cheap staff and they speak English, right? That's the wrong attitude, right? You know, sure, they might save some money, but that's not necessarily the reason why you do that, right? You'll still be able to save money, and you can still do things properly and be culturally sensitive. And as a matter of fact, the more that you are and the better you get your team performing, the more efficient they'll be. And ultimately, over the long term, you will have a better business. But I found a lot of businesses come here expecting a real quick fix solution, and you know, many, many times I've seen it not work. And I've seen them either bail out or they've had to significantly restructure their thinking and their approach and take a completely different tack that they didn't expect.
And that is a shame, isn't it? Because outsourcing is cheaper or offshoring. And I don't think if money wasn't an issue, then, you know, I think the ideal in any circumstance is to have people shoulder to shoulder in the same office space. So outsourcing, you know, we can't get away from the fact that outsourcing is cheaper, you know, and significantly cheaper. But having said that, you know, it's not, as you said, it's not turnkey. It's not a silver bullet. And anything within business is complex. Any sort of employee management, building teams, building operations and processes has a huge amount of inputs, outputs, nuances, and you know, moving parts. And I think you know, it's easy for some people to sort of think of outsourcing as a turnkey solution, and you know, just press a button and it gets done for you. So how much, you know, do you see in terms of coaching, the client actually needs a bit of coaching? Because, you know, from where I sit, a lot of outsourcing can be very similar to management consulting, in that, you know, you're actually building processes, refining processes, and getting these things to run efficiently. You know, and the companies aren't necessarily the best companies in the world, and they're not necessarily, you know, running their own shop as perfectly as they could be. So where do you see that divide in terms of needing to, you know, assist the company in building better processes?
Yeah, it's a good question. And my business partner, Mark, with our business, High Velocity Business Coaching, he often talks about that a lot of businesses actually treat the symptoms of problems but don't treat the root cause of problems. And so, for example, the culture element to a large extent can actually be a symptom of a deeper problem. So it's not necessarily the root cause. So meaning to say that if there are proper, as we just talked about or you just mentioned, if there are proper procedures and framework and things in place, then it can help to reduce a lot of these issues. And some of those processes and so forth might include coaching and training. So they don't necessarily imply an actual business process itself, but part of the actual continual improvement framework might include something like ongoing training or ongoing coaching to help overcome some of these issues. But you'll find that a lot of the time that these things are more symptoms rather than root causes of problems. So like we were saying before, some businesses come here and they literally think they can just turn the key and everything will just run properly. But if they actually don't have a continuous improvement framework or a business improvement methodology that they're actually trying to adhere to, then how can they expect their new staff to understand how their business actually works and follow it properly? And I've found that, and Mark in particular, having worked with big organisations like Telstra, that, you know, a lot of the time, a lot of these organisations jump at the gun and just think because they're a big organisation and everything works beautifully in their country that they can simply transfer that into another country and it's going to work. And a lot of the time they have struggles. Culture can be part of that, but a lot of the time their processes for being able to do that expansion.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you see, you know, when you see an organization operating locally, just all in one room, I think a lot of the knowledge and the organizational processes are really in people's heads. And I think when people start to outsource or offshore, they realize actually they've got to get all of this out of their heads onto a piece of paper. They've got to get processes, maps, so that this knowledge can be transferred, and then it can also be assessed as to whether it's being done properly and then refined. It's a process, isn't it? Which
that is absolutely spot on. Absolutely spot on. And that's why I talk about the cultural thing is just one part of the challenge that you'll have. But if you don't have all your processes and so forth set up properly, like Filipinos are very good. You give them a job to do and tell them what to do with the steps and they can do it. Like they do it perfectly fine. It's how do you communicate that to them? How do you involve them in the business? How do you get them to buy into what you're actually doing? You know, so that they're not literally just turning up to earn their salary, right? And that's what I'm saying. That's what the challenge actually is. And that's why you can have big organizations that run well in their own countries and they come here and try and implement the same things and it doesn't work. Or they have, you know, big challenges and struggles along the way. One of those, like what we've been talking about, is obviously the cultural side of things, but a lot of the time it can actually also be their process.
And you know, I would suggest that Filipinos, they're a very passionate workforce. They're eager to jump on board a mission and a vision and you know, really push a company forward. But it's obviously got to be communicated well. And as you said, it's sort of a first it's writing it down and then also making sure that that transfers culturally as well. So there's...
Yeah, well, it's comprehension. Essentially, it boils down to comprehension. But like I said, it's not just when we talk about how you say the message. It's not about whether they understand the accent and whatever. I mean, obviously, that's important, especially for Australians because we've got a really bad accent. But it's about speaking to them on a level in which they'll understand it. It's that, like I said, because we come from a very egalitarian culture, we tend to be a lot more direct and straight to the point. Whereas the hierarchical way of communicating it, there's a lot more, you've got to read between the lines, there's a lot more bling, there's a bit more, you know, in the way that they communicate. They don't quite get straight to the point the way that we do. So it's getting that balance right. It's a matter of saying, like, we understand there's a difference and we're not going to totally bend over and do things the way Filipinos want it done, but it's a matter of, you know, just the very basics of communicating how to be able to get that message across to them is critical, because at the end of the day, every business runs on communication. And as you said before, you know, when you're all under the one roof, that's fantastic. And, you know, everyone can buzz off each other. And as you said before, a lot of people retain information in their head and it all works wonderfully well when they're under the one roof. But then all of a sudden you bring in 20, 30, 40 other people who are a completely different culture, and so forth, and try and transfer that information across to them. It's not that easy. Just because they speak English doesn't mean that they're going to get it. You know what I mean? There's a whole heap of cultural elements at play here. And you know, like I said, it's not even just about whether they speak English. It's the way you say things and how you communicate things that matter just as much as what
you absolutely say. I mean, the English is now fantastic for the majority of the workforce, and you know, they're absolutely leading the region, and you know, really leading the world in terms of an English speaking nation for which it isn't their, you know, foremost first tongue language. It really is incredible. But as you say, you know, and I think this is the biggest takeaway from this episode, is that it's realizing, look, the nuances are very difficult. Trying to accurately explain it is very difficult, but it's just the acknowledgement that there is a difference in culture. They are different people, and it's being aware of that and being sensitive of that and formulating a game plan. And, you know, I think a lot of people can just assume with the most, you know, benevolent kind of intentions to just say, look, we're going to treat everyone the same. And very frequently it doesn't work. And, you know, it's a lot of sort of heartache and tears a couple of years later. And then the systems evolve to acknowledge that this is a different country there, you know, a different environment and a different culture. And then, you know, things do evolve. But it's most definitely a learning process, isn't it?
This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the whole thing. And that's why our business model is more about coaching than it is about training, because obviously there is a difference between training and coaching. So, you know, training is obviously going in and showing people a particular system, but then coaching them is making sure that they're implementing and using that system. So, and that's where I've identified, obviously, a gap in the offshoring and outsourcing industry there, where, you know, the things that we've talked about, organizations can't necessarily afford to employ somebody full-time to do this type of stuff, right, particularly if they're just only getting started with their offshoring or outsourcing journey. And, you know, as they're starting to scale up, they may be able to, you know, afford to put somebody in full-time or part-time or whatever. But that's why I offer my services on a consulting basis. So I'm able to go in and speak with organizations and work with them on a few key elements. Obviously, every business is different. They all have different nuances and so forth, different sizes, what have you. Different industries, so I'm able to offer my services as a consultant, go in, help to try and bridge the cultural gap both ways, and then and you know help businesses out to be able to improve their communication and their efficiencies when it comes to communication and understanding the differences in the drives Filipinos and also what drives the foreigners.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, on the cultural communication bit now, going back, you know, sort of 20, 25 years when the industry began, I think there was less awareness of outsourcing, offshoring Philippines, and it was more common for the protocol for the staff to lie and they should pretend that they're based in California somewhere. They were given anglicized names, and you know, even in the offices, they would be, you know, behind their desk, they would have a weather forecast for the day in California, so that they could actually, you know, put into their conversation, you know, the weather's nice here in California, to authenticate it, and you know, they were trained to such a degree that they would optimize their accents, you know, and that's almost. You know, it's pretty brutal, and I think the industry has come a long way now, and maybe also, you know, world globalization and people's awareness of offshoring. But now people are encouraged to proudly say, "Look, we're based in." If asked, obviously, you know, we're based in Manila in the Philippines. You know, and sort of talk proudly about their location, use their real names. You know, so I think the industry has definitely progressed a long way, and also. Clients are more accepting and of people from across the world. So I think this is moving in the right direction. But in terms of cultural communication, there is still training. You know, when I first moved here, I was surprised to see that a lot of these BPOs, they have cultural training so that, you know, if you do come across Australian accents or nuances or mannerisms or idiosyncrasies, people know how to manage them. So it's quite a big thing here, yeah? Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, common interactions with Australia and sort of things that people might find a little bit hard to manage if they're not from Australia?
Yeah, well, obviously, the Australian accent is probably one of the biggest factors. You know, with the Filipinos speak an American style of English. So there's a few, you know, basic fundamentals that they just pronounce completely differently to what we do. And once again, it depends on the situation. I mean, if you've got an Aussie customer ringing up, making an inquiry about his phone bill, for example, and he speaks to somebody that's based here, if the person taking the call doesn't have a lot of exposure to working with Australians, they're probably almost not going to understand what he says. So purely just because of the accent, especially if they're from sort of outback Queensland or something like that. So there's that part of it, but then there's also obviously the people here can be working with business partners or co-workers, colleagues and whatever that are based in Australia as well, and some of those people based onshore may not have even been to the Philippines themselves, like maybe the big boss has or whatever, but a lot of the counterparts haven't. And a lot of them also don't understand some of these nuances. So they'll be speaking to their co-workers that are based here, and same thing, there'll be language difficulties and what have you, purely just because of the accent and obviously the slang and the vocabulary and things like that. So there's some of the biggest challenges that Australian businesses face in particular, because We say things completely differently. Like, for example, you know, in Australia, we don't say gasoline, we say petrol, right? We say footpath, we don't say sidewalk. We say postcode, not zip code, right? Whereas all of those things are American words. So Filipinos can understand that. But if you, because they're speaking English as a second language, their vocabularies are reasonably limited. So they may only know one word for something. Like we know that, you know, for example, you know, vacation, holiday, or whatever, we know that there might be several words for one thing, whereas they only know one word. So if you, a lot of the time, they'll only know one word. So if they don't understand that word, then it throws a bit of confusion into the conversation. And then we go back to what we're talking about before, where the whole cultural thing comes to the fore, and the saving face and not wanting to look stupid because they don't understand and all that sort of stuff comes into it. So that's where I've seen a massive opportunity for my services, obviously, is working closely with a lot of the Australian BPOs that are based up here, purely because of the Australian language.
Yeah, I find as well there's you know, a lot of customer service is done in the Philippines, obviously, and you know, with my previous business that was hotel and hospitality based in London, and we obviously had the customer service done from Manila in the Philippines. There's a lot of cultural information required to, you know, help people if they're in an apartment in central London. Filipinos don't, well, they probably have never come across central heating. You know, many of them have never seen snow.
Yep.
You know, so there's a lot of very localized things of knowledge that people from wherever locality they are take for granted. And, you know, it's not a... It's got nothing to do with intelligence. It's just a familiarity with whatever is normal to those people over there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I often coach our prospects and clients that these are sometimes the hardest things to outsource because, you know, if you are based in those localities, it's the simplest of simple things and you just understand them firsthand. Whereas to teach and convey those things, you know, it can take months or years to someone to become familiar with what are sort of esoteric experiences. Yeah, are there sort of solutions to those issues?
Yeah, well, it's a very, very good point that you raise. And I mean, as we sit here looking out the window now, you know, we know that the Philippines, being a tropical country, it rains for 6 months of the year, and for 6 months of the year, it doesn't, more or less. And when it rains here, it can really, really rain, right? So, you know, that impacts the way things are done. That impacts infrastructure. That impacts a whole heap of things that, you know, floods and all these types of things that we, being from Australia and the UK, probably don't quite appreciate. So I think what you say there is absolutely spot on, and that's the whole point, is that everyone's a product of their environments, aren't they, right? So, you know, if you want to get the best out of something, then it's a matter of understanding the environment that you're entering as well, but also Filipinos needing to understand the environment that we come from. So with my Australian Culture and Communications training program that I run, I give them a very brief overview of Australian history, so just so they get a bit of an idea, because obviously the Philippines was a former Spanish colony and a former US colony. So I explain to them that we're a former British colony. So what I try and do is, rather than highlight the differences, I try and focus more on the similarities, because, as I said before, they do have a tendency to, I guess, put us up on a little bit of a pedestal. And when I say us, I'm talking Westerners in general. And I try and break that sort of down so that they feel like they're a lot more equal with us, because if they feel a lot more equal, they're going to feel a lot more comfortable communicating. They're not going to feel like the big boss is like this super, super duper big boss that is just untouchable and they can't speak to, whereas that's sort of the way it is in Asia, right? So then I sort of talk to them about, you know, migration in Australia, how we're very multicultural, how, you know, obviously there's a lot of Filipinos in Australia, there's a lot of people with accents in Australia, you know, Australia, you know, one third of the people that live in Australia.
So it's just building their awareness of the specifics to Australia, yeah, so that they can connect easier with people on the phone.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Absolutely correct, right? And connect with their counterparts, their bosses and co-workers that are based on shore as well. So, and I've found that works very effectively because that in itself helps to sort of close or bring the gap closer, because I'm trying to really show them that we're a lot more similar than what, you know, they think we are. Because obviously physically we stand out a lot different, you know, we're white, they're brown sort of thing. And we speak English and they speak it as a second language. So, you know, just straight away without saying anything, there's a physical difference that they feel puts them on the back foot. They, for some reason, feel a little bit inferior about that because they all want to be white. They all want to be, you know, speak perfect English and whatever. So when they do, you know, interact with somebody like that, they tend to sort of get a bit shy and what have you. They're very sort of humble people in that regard. So, yeah, it's just highlighting what the differences are, but also trying to bring it more into focus what the normalities actually are, or so the commonalities actually are, just to make them feel a bit more level with us, you know, because, as I say, that's what Australians want. I mean, Australia in particular, multicultural country, I mean, we've been raised to treat everyone equally. It doesn't matter whether you're black, white, tall, short, fat, female, whatever. It doesn't matter where you come from. We're taught to treat everyone equally, treat everyone on their merits, right? If you're a good person, you're a good person and you get treated accordingly. You know, you can have a boss in Australia who's younger than you, right? If he's qualified and got the experience and earned that position, that's okay. Whereas in Asia, under the hierarchical system, it's all about age, right? It's not about who's the best at doing the job. It's who's been at the company the longest, because they have, it's like the respect for the grandmother, right? They naturally just have a respect for the older person. It doesn't matter whether that person is actually better than them or qualified for the job or whatever it happens to be. A lot of the time it's just based on age, right? Whereas, you know, in an egalitarian culture, it's not like that. I mean, obviously people with more experience might get a bit of an advantage, but I mean, you know, how often is it these days where you've got somebody younger than you who's, you know, the CEO or whatever, because, you know, they deserve it, right?
And obviously, you know, nothing is black or white in any society, and even, you know, any workplace in any town, city, country is you know, there's politics. You've got to navigate these things. You've got to learn the people within the team. You've got to learn, you know, whether people are introverts, extroverts. So there is, you know, there's a lot of complexity and layers to any workplace, to any organization. But yep, obviously, you know, there's value in knowing how certain, you know, groups interact differently, and then how you tend to, you know, transfer that across. And, you know, I suppose, like, yep, as a sort of parting comment, the, you know, and obviously this is a loaded question, but what is the value in setting a strong culture? You know, can you not just get people to do the work? Can you not, you know, and especially when offshoring or outsourcing is really a contract employee, is it worth doing all of this long-term investment? And, you know, they could leave 6 months down the road. You know, and so have you seen value generated by this that is hands down obvious for people to pursue?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And I think in this day and age, a lot of that value can't just be measured on what the bottom line of the company is. You know, I think a lot of successful organizations are successful because they treat their people well. And, you know, people would rather be in a environment where everybody's happy, everybody's treated equally, everybody's treated with respect and a level of importance and whatever. And if it meant the company earned a little bit less on the bottom line, I think, you know, that's potentially a better longer-term position for a company to be in, because they will grow and they will get bigger and better if they have that type of a, I guess, corporate culture, rather than just totally looking at the bottom line and saying, oh geez, you know, we're gonna have to cut some heads because we, you know, we're a little bit money down. You know, once again, it goes back to looking at what the root causes of certain dysfunctions actually are within a business, and then working on improving those. So but yeah, I you know, if I definitely think offshoring and outsourcing can work. I mean, I've seen it work. it's once again, as we talked about at the start of this podcast, is the organizations that are entering this market just need to walk in with their eyes fully open and just totally understand what it is they're getting into, right? Not just looking at the fact it costs, you know, $7 or $8 a day or whatever it is. They need to take into consideration everything, right? And I think if they're able to do that, and the thing is, like, even myself, having been here 16 years, I mean, I'm still learning, right? and I'll always continue to learn, because no matter what happens, I am not a Filipino, right? I will never, ever think like a Filipino, and they will never, ever think like an Australian, right? But it's a matter of both parties understanding more about each other. Right, that's about the best solution that you can get, okay? And if you can achieve that, I have seen great results. And I think like you said, it might be a bit of a loaded question, and obviously I've got a bit of a vested interest myself, but, I definitely think that it's worth the effort, and should I say that the results and the rewards will be worth the effort. However, you need to approach it differently. It's not like, for example, you're in Melbourne, so you want to open up an office in Sydney, right? Or you're in Melbourne, you even want to open up an office in Auckland in New Zealand, right? That's a different country, but the cultures are very, very similar. But that would still come with a certain amount of challenges, wouldn't it, right? So and you would understand that, and you would prepare it for that and take that into consideration. However, if you're moving to a completely different country with a completely different culture and a completely different mindset, then why wouldn't you expect that to be different on another scale, right? And then if you understand that and you're prepared to deal with that, knowing what the rewards will be, then you will be successful. Right? But I think a lot of people, or a lot of organizations, should I say, and arguably people, try and take shortcuts. Like we said before, they just want to put a key in and turn it and bang it. It just all magically happens, but it doesn't, right? But people have got to keep in focus, why are they doing it in the first place, right? And ultimately, we can't shy away from the fact that people are doing it to save money or to reduce their costs in business, right? That's the main motivating factor. Okay, that's fine, right? Who in business wants to be in business and not make money, right? That's the bottom line. We obviously are all trying to achieve that. However, in order to achieve that, there are other things that need to be done if you're looking to enter this type of a market. And if you do those things properly, or at least the best that you can, then you'll be closer towards your goal of reducing costs in your business, because you'll be having things running here efficiently and doing and working out the way they should be.
As you say, there's so many factors that aren't directly measurable, you know, and then there are a lot of factors that you can measure as well, like absenteeism and job hopping and, you know, people's commitment and people going, you know, working a few extra hours versus working a few less hours, and people's general commitment to the mission of the company, and the company vibe as well.
And training and coaching is part of that as well, Derek, because, Filipinos, well, it's an Asian thing. I mean, Filipinos feel valued when they're getting trained and when they're getting coached, right? That's just part of their culture. They are very much like that. And so if a lot of companies are reluctant to, you know, they're like, oh, we put someone through 3 hours of training and that's 3 hours that they're not in operations and that affects the bottom line, et cetera, and they're looking at it from that perspective. But it's like, well, if you're investing in the training and coaching, what's the measurable output that you get from that? You know what I mean? So, and that's where, you know, you mentioned training and coaching. Or when I say you, I mean, if one mentions coaching and training to an organization, they're like, oh, you know, how much is that going to cost and how long is it going to take? It's like, you know, it's like a bad thing. It's like this evil monster that they don't want to confront. And it's like, well, if you want to get the best out of your staff, then you naturally have to do that, you know. You have to invest in your staff. It's not investing in training and coaching. You're investing in your staff, absolutely, right?
Yeah.
So if you expect your staff to commit to you and perform the best that they can, then you've got to commit to them, right? And you commit to them through training, coaching, and improving their knowledge and improving their understanding. And in terms of what I do with the Australian culture thing, if they're learning more about Australian culture and understanding Australian expectations and consumer expectations, et cetera, then they're going to do better at their job, right? Yeah. And then everyone's a winner.
Employment, right? It needs to be a long-term play, doesn't it? You know, and you need to look at the lifespan of the employee, the benefits of the employee, you know, and how they're going to grow from their interaction with you. It's got to be seen in a sort of mutually beneficial capacity, and I'm thinking now industry is all growing up and recognizing that is the sort of optimal path, and yeah, you know, that then allows for this sort of cultural awareness and optimization of the organization. So it's a win-win for everyone, I think. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Derek. And it's Derek Ackery of High Velocity. If anyone wants to learn more about these programs or what you do, how can they do that?
Okay, so I think in the show notes down the bottom, you'll have my email address and our website, but our website's highvelocity.com.ph, so you'll find all of our various training courses there that relate to Australian culture and communications training, but some of our other programs, leadership training and senior management training, etc.
Thank you so much, Derek. That was Derek Ackery of High Velocity Coaching. If you want to get in touch with Derek or know any more about High Velocity, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/269. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.